It's Thursday afternoon in Murrells Inlet, South Carolina. And you are climbing down the steps of one of those old-timey sightseeing trolleys. In front of you is a gigantic 15-foot-tall statue of horses fighting. They are up in the air on their hind legs. They're clobbering each other. It looks like one of the horses is about to rip the other horse's neck open with its teeth. And there's a guy riding on the back of that angry, hungry horse. He's fighting to hold on for dear life, and he is absolutely naked.
It's kind of violent, maybe a little disturbing, but to me, it's home. I've known this sculpture all of my life.
Catherine Hedgepath is who has taken you to see this statue. She is your guide here. She's a lifelong Myrtle Beach local and the founder of Myrtle Beach History Tours. And once you've taken in an eyeful of this unusual statue, a statue called Fighting Stallions, she'll direct you to turn around.
So if you were standing right where that sculpture is and you look across Highway 17, you would see this sort of gated walkway that sort of disappears into the trees. If you walk down that sidewalk, you would end up at Atalaya.
Set far back from the road, hidden by lush South Carolina greenery, is Atalaya. Atalaya is a castle. It is made of solid stone, and it's just this medieval-looking fortress peering out over the Atlantic Ocean. It's something you might see on the coast of Spain or Portugal, but from the Middle Ages. There's even a watchtower at the center, as if someone is supposed to be up there scanning the sea for pirates. Atalaya just looks like it comes from a totally different time and totally different place.
People just don't expect to have a Moorish castle in the middle of, you know, South Carolina, but we do.
I'm Dylan Thuris, and this is Atlas Obscura, a celebration of the world's strange, incredible, and wondrous places. Today's episode was produced in partnership with Discover South Carolina, and we are going to that castle. We are going to Atalaya and to those big fighting horses with a naked guy on top. It is all connected and involves an eccentric, reclusive couple from 1920s New York City, live bear pens, and endangered bats. It will all make sense after this. If you're looking for a place where the wide open skies and the towering mountains inspire you to find an untapped part of yourself, you might want to take a trip to Wyoming. It's a place where bold, curious spirits forge their own way on all types of adventures. There is no shortage of iconic, expansive landscapes out there. You can discover breathtaking hikes, stunning state parks, authentic Western culture, and other historic sites, along with the tales of famous outlaws like Butch Cassidy and pioneers like Buffalo Bill Cody. The truth lies west. Discover yours at travelwyoming.com.
Summer, the best time of year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there's another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access, no reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
Up close, Atalaya is a little bit intimidating. The walls are thick, solid stone with these protective wrought iron gates over all the windows. There's the watchtower, which looks like it might hold an archer or somebody ready to skewer you if you try to trespass. You can, however, go inside. And inside, it is surprisingly open. You can wander through all of Atalaya's 30 rooms, all of which are totally empty and a little bit mysterious.
The building makes weird noises at night, absolutely. I'm not a believer in ghosts or anything like that, nor have I ever seen anything like that. But the building makes strange noises at night. That I can definitely vouch for.
This is Mike Walker, And if anyone knows what sounds Atalaya makes at night, it's him.
To my knowledge, I'm the last person to have lived in Atalaya. Right out of college, I lived in the Huntington's garage that used to be the seasonal employee barracks.
Mike's an interpretive park ranger for Huntington Beach State Park, which includes Atalaya. Both he and Catherine have some interesting links to the place. So they are going to be telling that story together. I'm not saying Atalaya is haunted. Of course, if it was, we would know exactly who its ghost would be. First, there would be Anna. Born Anna Vaughn Hyatt in Cambridge, Massachusetts, she was the daughter of a zoologist. And when Anna was little, her older sister started studying sculpture.
And one day her big sister was home and she was having problems with a homework assignment. And little Anna just kind of bops into the room and kind of fiddles with the clay that her sister had been working with and just effortlessly creates this beautiful piece of art.
Catherine has been coming to Atalaya since she was a little kid.
Oh, I love telling their story.
Anna began studying sculpture with an artist in Boston, and according to one account, he threw her out of his class because she criticized his animal drawings for not being anatomically correct enough. She was a zoologist's daughter, after all. But eventually, Anna moved to New York City and became a really successful artist. In 1912, when she was 36 years old, she became the first woman to design a public monument in New York City. It was a statue of Joan of Arc.
You just go down Riverside Avenue to Riverside Park, and you will see this tall pedestal, and on it, you'll have Joan of Arc sitting on her faithful steed.
In the early 1920s, Anna got a commission from the Hispanic Society of America. They wanted a decorative bronze medallion. The founder of the society was a guy named Archer Milton Huntington, and you can kind of tell from the name, he was a very rich man. He was on that railroad money. Archer was divorced and in his 50s, and he'd founded the Hispanic Society after travels through Spain in his youth, and he just had a deep love of Spanish art and literature.
So Anna shows up at his office for the meeting, he opens the door, and they've never met each other, but when they look at each other, they realize that they recognize each other because they've seen each other like every day. On the train when Archer was going to his office and she was going to her Greenwich Village studio.
They became good friends and Archer fell in love. Archer actually proposed to Anna several times before she accepted. Anna was doing super well on her own. She didn't need to get married. And I think also Anna was a little bit afraid of marriage because her older sister, who was a very talented sculptor, and that's kind of what got Anna involved in sculpting. Once she got married, she gave up her art.
Their relationship was so subtle, it went from, from business to friendship to love, that when they got married, everybody was surprised. It was a tiny little ceremony in her Greenwich Village studio on March 10th, 1923.
He supported her work financially, emotionally, intellectually. He gave her inspiration, gave her ideas. I think it was the perfect marriage for the both of them.
When word got out that they were married, they became the celebrity it couple of that day. He the great philanthropist and she the great artist.
They were so famous that the president of the United States would give them a call on their birthday. Conveniently, both of their birthdays were on March 10th, which was also their wedding anniversary. Their social life in New York was really lively. They would host 150 people at a time for dinner. After one big Christmas party, Anna wrote just one word in her journal: tired. But then, in 1927, they had a bit of a scare. Anna came down with tuberculosis.
The doctor said if there's any hope for her to recover, that they had to find a warmer climate to spend the winter in.
And so the Huntingtons took a trip down to South Carolina, out along the ocean, about 20 miles from what is today downtown Myrtle Beach.
In the late 1800s, early 1900s, it was very common for wealthy northerners to move to the South and buy remnants of former rice plantations. The Huntingtons actually purchased former rice plantations that had already been purchased and turned into a hunting club, and they immediately turned it into a wildlife refuge. They did not allow hunting on the land.
First, the Huntingtons established a sculpture garden called Brook Green Gardens, the idea being to showcase some of Anna's art. Though, as the Great Depression got underway, they also would commission work from other sculptors as well to help keep them afloat. Then, in the winter of 1931, they started working on what would become their own refuge, this fortress at Elia. Archer pulled together a work crew of 100 local men to start construction on this dream house.
I sometimes think of Adelaide as Archer's life-size Lego set. There were no blueprints, drawings. There wasn't even a sketch on the back of a cocktail napkin for what the building would ultimately become. Literally, the whole thing sprang right out of Archer's brain.
For the design, Archer was inspired by all the castles he'd seen traveling through Spain as a young man. He wanted a square house arranged around an open courtyard. Its central feature would be a watchtower, or Adelaya in Spanish.
The Huntingtons, having never lived in the South before, were very concerned about mosquitoes. So he had a very forward-thinking idea. He was going to build a watchtower that was really a water tower that was going to double as a giant bat house. He wanted bats to live in the watchtower. When the bats fly out every evening and eat the mosquitoes, they figured the problem would be solved. In reality, they hit upon a more practical way of avoiding mosquitoes, and that is they only visit in the wintertime.
But because of Archer's fly-by-the-seat-of-his-pants approach to building this, getting everything exactly to specifications was a real process.
It was built, torn down, and rebuilt several times over the course of its construction. And one of the main reasons for that, they were deliberately trying to stretch the construction period out as long as possible to keep those 100 men on the work crew employed in the middle of the Great Depression. So it was kind of like a privately funded public works project in many respects.
In 1933, the house was finally completed. And while the design may have been all out of Archer's brain, the person it was designed for was Anna.
It was built largely to facilitate Anna's artwork. So it had two different sculpting studios. One that didn't have a roof, the outdoor studio. That was where Anna preferred to work. She preferred to work outdoors under natural sunlight, if at all possible.
Anna loved sculpting animals. Animals like the horses she immortalized in the Fighting Stallion sculpture across the street. She also loved sculpting bears and monkeys and lions. And her work was super, super realistic. It was like an anatomical drawing. Her subjects are often seen in action. They're jumping or fighting or stretching. You can see individual muscles flexing. And to capture this, she preferred to work with live models on site.
We know from her journal that at one time they kept a young alligator in one of the bathtubs.
She had bear pens next to her studio, her outdoor studio. She had a little horse stable. And then on the other side, that's where she had the kennels for the dogs and the bears.
That's right. Live bears in the middle of the courtyard. Space was made for pretty much any animal that Anna could want to sculpt. But what they didn't leave much space for were human visitors.
There's no ballroom, there's no billiard room, there's not a single guest bedroom anywhere in the building. That was not by accident.
They have what they call the sunroom. That's where they did their primary entertaining. Well, it's about the smallest space in the whole complex because they would have people over for, you know, tea. And then they'd chat a while and then it's like, oh, well, nice to see you. And then they would go on. It has every comfort that they needed and then just wasn't so comfortable that people wanted to stay.
Adelaya was a place for Archer and Anna to work and rest. And through the 1930s, they had some really happy times there. They would drive down in their Airstream full of pets, dogs, birds, monkeys, and then just post up for the winter. But a few short years later, World War II broke out, and Anna and Archer retreated up to New York and Connecticut, and Adelaya became a fortress for real.
They turned all their property over in Adelaya over to the U.S. Army Air Corps, the precursor of what would be the United States Air Force. And so they had horse patrols on the beach, keeping a lookout for enemy aircraft, submarines.
After the war, Anna and Archer came down to Atalaya a few more times. But by then, Archer was in his 80s, not in great health. 1955, he died. Anna came down again in 1958, but she decided that the visit would be her last. She gave all of the furniture that she had designed away to the house employees and closed the doors.
I have just a personal note. The people who were the caretakers were actually related to my husband. And their home was our location for our rehearsal dinner 20 years ago. So my rehearsal dinner was served from the buffet designed by Anna Hyatt Huntington.
In 1960, the house and over 2,000 surrounding acres became part of the South Carolina State Park System.
And it was left pretty much open to the elements, grass had mowed for many years.
It became a really popular campground and beach, and the house was kind of used as a barracks for lifeguards and seasonal workers, like Mike back in the early 90s.
The bear pens became where we stored, chainsaws and weed whackers and things like that.
Today, all of that stuff has been cleared out of the house. There isn't furniture or anything in the rooms. It's just bare stone walls, a fireplace here and there. If Atalaya started out as this fantasy of an abandoned fort, it's now become one. And you can imagine Anna and Archer floating through the space, bears roaming the courtyard, rearing up on their hind legs as Anna sculpts them.
It's sort of just a very casual place to kind of hang out, as opposed to like a formal historic home that, you know, you couldn't have children running around in it. But of course, that's exactly what you have at Atalaya. It's just a lot of fun. I mean, it's a fortress, so you really can't tear things up too much. So that's why people, especially little people, can just sort of run free through it.
And there's another aspect of the fantasy of Atalaya that has become real, too. Archer had dreamed of the watchtower being filled with bats. Today, the grounds have become home to a group of tiny endangered bats, a very charming little species called Raffinesque's big ear bats.
But they're very tiny, and they have ears almost half as big as they are. Whenever I'm in Atalaya, that's kind of like a little Easter egg hunt. See if I could find one of the bats.
Beyond the animals that Anna sculpted and you can see displayed across the street at Brook Green Gardens, you can also see a ton of real animals around Atalaya. There are sea turtles and shorebirds and reptiles.
There's a very interesting mix of ecosystems in the park, which equals an abundance of wildlife. And a lot of that goes back to the Huntingtons kind of starting a tradition of actively managing the land for the benefit of wildlife and being good stewards of the land for wildlife. And that's definitely something with the State Park Service that we try to continue.
Atalaya Castle is open to the public. And once a year on March 10th, Archer and Anna's joint birthday and wedding anniversary, they have this special celebration. And across the street from Atalaya, you can visit the Brook Green Gardens Park. Brook Green was built on the remnants of former rice plantations, so there are historical interpretations of that history. And of course, all of the work of Anna Hyatt Huntington and other artists. Brook Green is actually the largest figurative sculpture garden in America. It is well worth a visit to both the castle and the sculpture garden and into the strange dreams of Anna and Archer. Our podcast is a co-production of Atlas Obscura and Stitcher Studios. This episode was produced by
Amanda McGowan.
The production team includes
Doug Baldinger,
Chris Naka,
Camille Stanley,
Manolo Morales,
Baudelaire,
Gabby Gladney,
Johanna Mayer.
Our technical director is
Casey Holford.
This episode was mixed by
Luce Fleming.
If you want to learn more, be sure to visit atlasobscura.com. There's a link in our episode description. And our theme and end credit music is by Sam Tyndall. I'm Dylan Thuris, wishing you all the wonder in the world. I will see you next time.
Some people like to deep clean every Saturday morning. I prefer to spend a few minutes every day keeping things fresh with Lysol. Lysol's brand new day disinfecting wipes conveniently tackle surfaces, including remotes, tablets, and smartphones, killing 99.9% of viruses and bacteria with a fragrance that feels like a tropical getaway for your senses. Don't just clean, Lysol clean.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.